Hi everyone, and welcome to the ISB podcast, where we bring you the later insights from our recent ISB meeting. I am Tadeusz Sendon, member of the ISB.
So I'm Linda Nizan Hutter. I'm the vice chair of the ISB, and it's exciting to have our first podcast episode of 2026. And we're delighted to have you with us, and I'm delighted to be here with Tadeo. Okay. We just wrapped up our first meeting of 2026, and we discussed three projects, and we're going to discuss two of these projects with you today, one on intangible assets, and the second one, our post-implementation review of the LISA standard. But Tadeo, could you kick off our discussion on intangible assets?
Sure, I can. Thank you, Linda. Let's start with a quick refresher. We launched the intangible assets project in April 2024. In response to our third agenda consultation, where our stakeholders highlighted the importance of this topic, they asked us to carry out a comprehensive review of the current standard and study 8, in particular to ensure that financial statements provide investors with the most relevant information about the company's intangibles. In May last year, we set two main objectives for the project. Usefulness of the information, and also deal with some newer types of intangible items and new ways of using them. As we all know, this is a large project, particularly given how much the world has evolved in this area. That's why we decided to start this comprehensive review in a focused way, and we are pursuing two streams of work. First one, we are looking at users' information needs, including a better understanding of what users want to know about recognized and unrecognized intangible assets. And second, we are assessing potential changes to the definition and recognition requirements using newer types of intangible items and new ways of using them as test cases. We already carried out extensive research on both streams and began discussing the test case work stream this month. Is it enough?
I think that's good. Thank you very much. Now, I think at this meeting, it's important to remind people we didn't make any decisions. And so I always talk about projects in two ways, the what we're going to do and what we've decided, or the how we're going to do it. And in January, we were really focused more on the how. So we discussed our approach to selecting the test cases and how to identify principles and topics to explore further for those test cases. And in selecting the test cases, we focused on areas where we commonly heard concerns from stakeholders, where the financial reporting effects are really significant, and where there's improvements that we could make that would benefit a wide range of intangible assets. And so all of these were true for the two selected test cases, one, cloud computing, and the second, agile software development. So we spent the first part of the meeting by discussing how we'll explore those two test cases, and then we talked about, after that, whether there's a need for the ISB to explore any other test cases. So back to you, Tadeo.
Thank you, Linda. Now, our first test case proposed, we looked at a, let's say, real-world example involving cloud computing. This matters because more and more companies use software as a service, or also known as SaaS. Just think about the software you access online rather than install on your own computer. And we do that as individuals. But when we look at for a company, they are spending much more resources on this one. It's not always clear what, if anything, should be recognized, for example, as an intangible asset. And that example brought also a few tricky questions, especially around control. In other words, who really controls the underlying software or resources? Stakeholders asked for clear guidance on what to consider, for example, how you access the software, whether you can download it and run it independently, and whether you can restrict other people's access. It also raised a basic question, what's the asset exactly? Is it the software itself or simply a right to access the software? And then there is another layer to it, the unit of account. And just to put it simple, if a company pays for configuration or customization and that work creates new code, should that be treated separately from the original software or as part of the overall arrangement? That's quite interesting practical question that we believe that with these test cases, it will help us to go through the change that we need to implement in the standard. Based on all of this, the ISP is planning to explore potential improvements to make it easier for companies to identify what the asset is and to assess whether they control it in these kind of arrangements. Back to you, Linda.
Why, thank you. So it's my turn now, and I'm going to talk about agile software development as our second test case. This test case explores the challenges entities face when applying the IS 30 requirements to software when you're trying to use the so-called agile methodologies. Now, the current recognition requirements rely on the distinction between research as a process and development as a process or phase, those two phases. Because as we know, we don't capitalize for the research phase, but we do capitalize for the development stage currently. So stakeholders told us that in an agile environment, the boundary between research and development is very blurred. And so it's difficult for an entity to determine when the development phase actually begins and to apply the recognition criteria as an asset. So for example, it can be hard to determine whether a software being developed is technically feasible and is probable of producing economic benefits, which is the test for capitalizing in the development phase. So we discussed what principles and topics the ISB could explore for this test case. We thought it'd be useful to explore improving recognition requirements, for example, by developing separate recognition requirements for different methods of intangible assets generation, or potentially a new recognition approach suitable for all development methods, or to update the existing requirements. So we're exploring these. So we discussed whether the ISB could explore developing requirements to help entities determine a suitable unit of account. Always comes up today, everything we talk about, unit of account. And also, as well as improving guidance on initial measurement, amortization, and subsequent expenditure. So today, back to you.
Yeah. Well, after we discussed these two test cases, the SaaS and agile software development, we finally discussed whether we should have other test cases, potential other test cases, including data resources and artificial intelligence, that the AI-related assets. We consider whether these emerging types of intangible assets warrant separate test case, given their growing significance. We undertook research to identify accounting issues related to these asset types. What particularly interesting is that many of the issues we identified were similar to those we already heard about for cloud computing and agile software development. For example, questions about identifying the economic reserves, determining control, again, establishing the unit of account, or distinguishing between research, development, enhancement, and maintenance costs. All these questions appear consistently across cloud computing, agile software development, and AI-related assets. I didn't mention actually here the data resource. You know why? Because actually, for many years in my previous life, I worked as an auditor of a credit bureau company. And it was interesting because all these questions here, I used to discuss them. I mean, there is nothing new here. But I have to agree, there are many similarities. And we don't think that, I was convinced that we don't need a distinct test case for either data resources or AI, because actually the SaaS and agile software development probably will provide us some background and help us to answer some of these questions. Instead, what we are going to do, actually the staff has proposed and we agree with that we are going to monitor developments in these areas and use data resources and AI as examples when exploring similar principles and topics for selected cases, and then do some potential solutions for them.
Well, it's good to know we have an expert on the board. That's very good to know. So, you know, I think today, generally, most of the board members highlighted that they like this approach of using test cases because it's already allowed us to identify fundamental principles and concepts in IS 38 that may need an update. And we're going to explore them first through the prism of the selected test cases and then by broadening the discussion to a wider range of intangible assets. But let's not forget, at each step, we're going to go back and look at the concepts and the conceptual framework, the revised conceptual framework. So let's not forget that we will be true to the conceptual framework. So the aim is to consider possible improvements to the principles in IS 38, not to solve specific application issues. Now, it's important to note that exploring the identified principles and topics doesn't mean we intend to make fundamental changes. Whether and what changes will be proposed will depend on the results of the work that we do. So looking ahead, we plan to start discussing these principles and topics in the second quarter of this year and continue these discussions throughout the year. We'll also consult with our advisory groups as necessary as the work progresses in the second half of the year. Now, as a reminder, we are also continuing our work on exploring investor needs for information about intangible assets and associated expenses, and we plan to discuss findings of this work stream in the second quarter of this year.
Thank you, Linda. After that, we can move on to the next topic of our meeting. That was the post-implementation review of IFRS 16. That was quite interesting in many of our stakeholders interested on this one. This standard came into effect from 1st January 2019. It requires lessees to recognize assets and liabilities for almost all leases. A big change, you can imagine, for many entities. It substantially impacts reported assets and financial leverage. But before we talk about what we discussed over this meeting, let me remind you about what a PIR, post-implementation review, is. This is a review that is conducted a few years after the standard has been implemented to see if it is working as intended. So with this PIR, what we are going to do is exactly that one. Look at whether IFRS 16 is working as intended and meeting its objectives. What do you think about that, Linda?
I think this is one of my most favorite things to do, because it helps us evaluate, you know, are there any things we missed, and we can look at that. So I'll just remind you that formally the PIR process consists of two phases. So in the first phase, we do our homework. Our staff identifies matters to be examined in the PIR, and they draw on discussions, for instance, with the Interpretations Committee, our other advisory groups, and stakeholders at large. And the ISB then publishes what we call a Request for Information, or RFI, to seek feedback on the identified matters. And that's what we do in phase one. Phase two involves consideration of the comments from the public consultation, along with the information gathered from any additional analysis and other consultative activities that the staff may have performed. So we published our request for information in June of 2025, and it was open for comment until mid-October 2025. We were delighted. We received 122 comment letters. We held 35 outreach events with stakeholders from around the world after we issued the RFI, and we truly appreciate the time and effort all of our stakeholders invested in providing us with their thoughtful feedback on this review. So, Tadeo, can you take us through the first part?
Yes, we received about 120 letters.
Yeah.
But it's not just about the number of letters. It's the number of pages.
Yes. Some of them were actually very long, weren't they? When you read through them? Yeah. I know. I agree.
I did it. And then some of them quite interesting, because actually not only providing us about whether the standard is working as intended and also meeting its objectives, but also talking about solutions for some of the concerns they have in relation.
Those are some of my favorite things, because I always like it. It's great for people to tell us if there's a problem, but I like it when they make constructive suggestions. So they kind of give us a head start.
Yeah, we need the solvers.
Yes, yes.
That's good.
Absolutely.
But anyway, another person that worked very well here, not only our stakeholders, was the staff, because actually it was so many pages that they need to summarize, and they did it in a very nice way. They presented this in this January. Overall, most stakeholders said that the standard is meeting or largely meeting its objective. I would say largely meeting, and then you see that there are some concerns here. As I said, most of them raised these concerns about specific aspects of the standard, including the usefulness of the information produced and the amount of judgment required to apply the standard. I think that's these two topics are linked.
Absolutely.
Preparers in particular question the benefits of the standard, exactly because whether this is providing useful information to investors, and many of the stakeholders also commented on the cost of applying IFRS 16, expressing concerns about high ongoing costs.
Absolutely. And January meeting was interesting because we're still at the initial stage of looking at the feedback. So we again reviewed the overall comments we received, and we started really honing in on the stakeholder suggestions for potential improvements in their areas of concern. I thought we had a really open discussion on that. So we did explore the usefulness of the information resulting from lessee's application of judgment, particularly around the lease term determination and discount rates. And every time we do anything on discount rates, that always gets flagged as an area of judgment that some people struggle with. So, and we had a very active discussion on the ongoing costs that lessees face when applying the measurement and requirements, including the challenges of reassessments, lease modifications, and again, the discount rate determinations. We examined the feedback we got on the usefulness of information about lessees' lease-related cash flows, and we separately examined feedback from users of financial statements in this particular aspect. And many users see leases as debt-like transactions, and many users' overall assessment of IFRS 16 has been positive. So what's notable across the feedback is, despite the various concerns and suggestions for improvements, there appears to be little appetite among stakeholders for fundamental changes to the standard. But this one thing about the standard really has caught my attention today, because they don't want change, because they don't have to change again. But we know that users are still asking many entities to provide the information under our old standard. And I think they did that because they still want those lease commitment cash flows. They want to know what the future cash flows are going to be. And so that's going to be something interesting for us to ponder, because you don't really want these companies to be doing one current standard for the financial statements, but still having to track under the old standard. That's definitely something we're going to have to work on. So you want to wrap this up?
Yeah, well, actually, I fully agree with you, because actually, especially coming from the region I came, I know and I feel the pain when you start talking about discount rate.
Yes.
It's a big difference that it may make depending on the one that you select. And that's what they talk about, subjectivity in applying this standard. But anyway, I think that we are going in the right direction here, thinking about how we can maybe address these concerns. And that's exactly what we are looking ahead in February to discuss the remaining feedback on this comment letters. And after that, we will consider whether any action is needed within the concept of what a PIR is. It's not a project in itself.
Exactly.
We will make suggestions about whether we should add something to our agenda consultation or add something to be consulted in the future that people should understand here. And we expect to finalize our decisions in this third quarter of this year. And we plan to publish a report and feedback statement setting out our finds and next step before the end of this year.
Oh, we're going to be busy, I think.
Yeah.
So is our staff. Well, thank you, Tadeo. And for you, our users, our listeners, that covers what happened on the January ISP meeting. There is one additional point I'd like to make, though, before we wrap up, to let you know that we also finalized several agenda decisions from the IFRS Interpretations Committee this month, including updates to existing decisions for IFRS 18 and two new decisions on IFRS 9. And these are now available on our website to support consistent application of our standards. So don't overlook that, because I think those are really important. But before we completely wrap up, let's briefly look at what listeners can expect from us in 2026. We have several significant milestones coming up. It's going to be a busy year. So within days of when we record this, literally within days, we expect to publish an exposure draft proposing amendments to IAS 28 Investments and Associates and Joint Ventures in relation to the Fair Value Option Project. Now, this is important because we absolutely have to move fast with the proposed amendments, as it's important that they become effective at the same time as IFRS 18. So we are doing a shortened comment period of 60 days. So stay tuned. You'll have that. You may already have that by the time you're listening to this podcast. I never know. And then in the second quarter of 2026, we plan to issue the long-awaited IFRS accounting standard regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities. So stay tuned for that. In the second half, we plan to publish an exposure draft on amendments to IFRS 9 financial instruments related to our amortized cost measurement project and a request for information on the PIR of IFRS 9 hedge accounting. And of course, the board will keep progressing on all the rest of the technical projects in its work plan, continuing discussions, taking decisions where possible, and applying the same rigorous due process that underpins all of our standard-setting activities to give us the quality that we want in our standards. We expect 2026 to be a busy year, progressing towards the momentum we already have achieved on our statement of cash flows projects as well. And so we're excited about moving that forward as well. So this concludes our episode of the ISB podcast. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to bringing you updates on our continuing work next month. And thank you so much for doing this with me today. Okay.
Thank you, Linda. Pleasure to be with you. Thanks to our stakeholders for listening. And until next time, goodbye from all of us from the IASB. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifres.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifres.org, or find us on social media.